All right.
All right, we're up live, man. Let's go for it. This is the July 15th. This is in place of the Total Fitness Bodybuilding Talk Show. I'm with Joey Valancourt here. And tonight is a bit of a different show. Like I say, this is basically a shared show that myself and Joey are doing here. And I'm actually going to be in the hot seat. Lee Hayward's going to be sitting down and getting plugged here by Joey's going to be shooting some questions my way regarding bodybuilding training and everything else, and more specifically with the Blast Your Biceps program and some arm specialization training stuff. So, like I say, I have special guest coach, Joey Valancourt on the line. And Joey, how about we just do a little introduction, because, like I say, we have callers here and probably don't know who you are. So a little introduction on your end, and then I'll do the same, because I'm sure there's going to be some people tuning in who are probably brand new to my show as well.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, well, my name is Joey Valancourt for your listeners here. I'm creator and author of the Bones Above Muscle Building Program. I recently became the Fame Central Fitness Model Champion of 2010. I competed in that category. And yeah, I've just been kind of working out and doing the whole fitness thing for quite a while now. I actually started off, you know, reading some of your material whenever I first started. And I always like to tell people that it came from a fitness Googler's perspective, because I used to just be, you know, on the other side of the internet, just searching for answers to building muscle and all those questions that people have. So I can completely relate. I kind of took it to the next level, though. I got my certifications. I became a personal trainer. I started to write articles and books. So, you know, I've come a long way since then, but I can completely, you know, go back to where a lot of people are right now. So, I mean, that's kind of where I'm at. Maybe, Lee, if you don't mind, I know some people on the call for my own listeners, the Bones to Buffers here, might not like to know, you know, some of your own history and just a bit of stuff you've done regarding fitness, you know, program designs.
Yeah.
And, you know, just how you got your start in the whole fitness business.
Sure. Yeah. First of all, I just want to comment, that was pretty cool how you mentioned that you were a fitness Googler. I think that's where a lot of us probably, this day and age for sure, are related, and that's how you get started. In my own case, I started working out back before there was ever a Google or before there was an internet, so I sound like a dinosaur when I say this. But seriously, I started working out back in the late 80s, and that was just literally like working out at home and some martial arts and things like that. But I kind of got so serious with weight training Christmas of 1990. That's when I asked my parents to get me a home gym set. And they ended up getting me a York barbell and dumbbell set and a York 2001 home gym machine. I don't know if you remember those or not, but that's where I got my started. And I literally worked out with that little home gym. And, you know, over the years, of course, added to it, getting better equipment and things like that. But I trained at home for over 8 years before I eventually moved to a commercial gym. And I even did several bodybuilding shows, did my first three bodybuilding shows training from my home gym. So that was pretty cool. I started competing in bodybuilding in 95. I did the Newfoundland Provincials. I was 17 years old at the time. And pretty much did bodybuilding shows every year. The way it is where I live in Newfoundland, we usually have one show a year. And pretty much, you know, with only a couple exceptions, I've done every show every year. So I'm going straight through. And I've also competed at the regional level, competed at the Atlantic Canadian Bodybuilding Championships. And my most recent show actually was this past April at the 2010 Atlantic Canadians. And that show I got in my best shape ever, competed as a light heavyweight, and ended up placing 6 out of 10 guys. It was a very competitive class. It's actually like a small national show because the caliber of the competitors. But that was my bodybuilding history, I guess. And how I got started with the whole internet aspect of it was after high school, I did a computer studies course at one of our local colleges here. And one thing that I really took a liking to was the whole website development. And I literally started my first bodybuilding website back in 1997. It was actually a school project. I created a bodybuilding website for my internet design class. And that's I put that website live, and the current site that I have now, LeeHayward.com, the original version of that went live in 1999, and that's pretty much all I've been doing. I mean, I took that website and I started, you know, training people online and designing workout programs and just basically started expanding from there. So this is all I've ever done. I've been an online fitness guru, so to speak, since the late 90s. And I guess they say the rest is history. Here we are doing an interview now.
No, for sure. And I mean, I've been a long-time follower of your stuff. Even like just recently, whenever I was going to be competing in my first fitness model show, and it was a championship show, so it was a pretty big deal. And as you might know, and maybe other people on the call, if you're ever doing a competition, a lot of the stuff is kind of underground information that's hard to obtain. So I actually read some of your articles on preparing for a show, and I remember one in particular that you said that it was one of your first shows that you were doing, and you ended up, you had to shave your entire body, right? Because you have to do that for the show, and then you ended up telling your dad about it or something. And he said, oh, man, no man ever should have to shave his body, you know? Something's wrong. And so that was just pretty funny, because going through the exact same thing, I felt that shame there at first. But, you've been a complete inspiration to me, and I know a lot of other people, you know. You've been around for quite some time. Like you said, 1990. I know your most recent blog just went up, but aside from that, I mean, you've had a site up, products out for quite a while. You're quite the entrepreneur when it comes to, you know, online fitness programs. So I congratulate you for that, and I thank you for all the information you've been given so far.
Cool. You know, it's much appreciated to hear the feedback, and I'm glad to be of help. You know, it's always cool to hear stories like this, and, there's not a day goes by I don't get emails from people from all over the world like that. So, again, thanks again, Joey. It's nice to know that the work goes appreciated, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, for sure. And, I mean, for people like me who took it kind of to the next level, there's other entrepreneurs that I kind of followed and, you know, just led me down to this path. So that's the power of an online fitness program. And today, like I said, I wanted to kind of give my listeners a chance to look into your new Blast Your Biceps program that I actually reviewed, and, you know, it's quite a cool program because it actually has a design goal where it's just to build bigger arms. It's not just a generic program. It's a specialized program for arms. So first off, I just want to, you know, I want to get your opinion on the main reason why the majority of people, you know, who are looking to build bigger arms always fail in accomplishing it. Like, what's the number one thing that they're doing wrong?
Well, first of all, when it comes to any stubborn body part, and I'm using arms here because in my case, with my physique, just genetically, I have, you know, less than great arms. They are always been lagging behind my other body parts. Like for me, my chest seems to respond pretty well. My back seems to respond well. I have really ridiculous calves. I always get commented on that. And if you've seen some of my pictures and videos or whatnot, you've probably seen them. And what I found, like I've basically been around this game a long time, and I've talked to everyone from your average, you know, musclehead gym goer to literally, you know, the world's top bodybuilders. I mean, you know, we've had guys like Branch Warren, Jay Cutler come and do guest posing appearances for us. And so, I mean, I've hung out with those guys and picked their brains for training information. So I've really worked from everybody from the bottom right to the top. And one thing that I find, and it seems to be a common trait, is guys with really good body parts, generally it's genetics. You know, for whatever reason, they have more muscle in those body parts, and they just really respond. Now, in my case, like calves, they grow crazy. I mean, I don't even train my calves anymore, and they're still probably my strongest body part.
Nice.
But when it comes to arms, I got to fight for every, you know, inch of muscle that I gain. And that's what I found when it comes to, you know, body part training a lot of times, is that it's genetics. It's not necessarily that you're doing something wrong, because you could probably be doing a similar type of workout for, you know, all your major muscle groups, but some muscles are just going to respond better than others. So, I mean, it's the cursed genetics, the hand you were dealt, basically. And that's why I created this program, because I was always suffering through, you know, weak genetics in the arm department, and that's what I wanted to really do. I mean, that was what I was passionate about. I wanted to figure out, okay, how do I overcome this Just a second, guys. Something came up here on the okay, something come up on my computer. Never mind. All right. Did that come through, Joey?
I know.
Did you hear that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I heard that.
Okay.
I didn't hear something else.
The reason why I just paused in for a brief second, I'm calling in through Skype on my computer, and I have this pop-up window. I made sure it's coming through okay.
Okay.
All right. Sorry about that.
No, that made sense. And you said that you kind of had to overcome skinny genetics yourself. And when I was going through the book, I couldn't help but kind of laugh at one of the acronyms you have in there. It's SNAS. And why don't you just tell the people listening here what exactly that stands for and why those people kind of need your program?
They need the program, absolutely, for the spaghetti noodle arm syndrome.
That's it.
And that's what I considered it. And like I say, that's one thing that just stands out in my mind. When I look back at some of my old pictures, like say I had my arms were just so skinny compared to the rest of my body. And that's why I termed this. I have this spaghetti noodle arm syndrome.
So I love
if you're
that.
Suffering from that, you've come to the right place. Yeah.
Okay. I've got a really good question here, and this has come into my inbox before, and I just wanted to get your opinion on it. You know, a lot of people, they want to build up their arms, and like any lagging body part, they think that, you know, the more they train it, the better it's going to become. And unless it's like a planned program variable, which like in the program you design, there is a bit more attention to the arms, but why don't you explain why you can't do that forever? Like you can't just go out and work your arms 5 days a week or, you know, if four sets is good for your arms, and a lot of people think that six or maybe eight might be better. And why is that a flawed way of thinking?
Well, it comes down to what your body can recover from. I mean, yes, for a short period of time and in a structured plan, you can use what I like to term like controlled overtraining to spur on new muscle growth. But it's only a short-term thing. You can't, like you said, train your arms every single day and expect to, you know, continue to make gains. Because your body's just going to break down, and you know, injury is inevitable in that case. Very often, tendon injury is one big thing from just overusing the muscles and the joints and everything else. One thing, if anybody has done a lot of arm training, for example, your elbows will tend to get sore. You know, you might develop some form of tendonitis. And the same thing, like if people tend to bench press too often, you know, very often it's a shoulder injury and rotator cuff problems. So, I mean, there's... you got to work with your body. If you abuse it, it's just going to break down. So that's why one thing, very often a lot of people, when we're coaching guys who want to build up size, the very first step that I ask them to take is, hey, take a full week off and just let your body and your system, you know, your central nervous system, everything just totally recover, and then we'll move into a structured program. And I believe you actually follow this same approach with a lot of your followers, too, with your Bones to Buff program. Isn't that correct, Joey?
Yeah, for sure. And from what I've noticed for my own people, like I deal with kind of skin and bones type of guys, and that's where I got my start. So I find, just for like my own experience, it might be different from others, but every 5 to 6 weeks, I like to take about 3 to 4 days. And sometimes if I feel like I'm very tired, I'll take a full week off like you recommended.
Mm-hmm.
And, man, when you come back to the gym after that time off, it's incredible. Like, maybe not the first couple of days, but definitely going back into that training cycle, you get stronger, you feel better, and you notice it. Like, you start getting the pump in your muscles again, and even though it doesn't exactly translate to instant muscle growth, eventually, you know, just by overloading your muscles with heavier weights, that will contribute to the muscle gains. So, I mean, yeah, for sure, I completely agree with that. By taking time
yep.
off. The other thing, like you were talking about genetics, and that's a big factor in, you know, what your arms are going to look like. And my arms, like I don't consider myself to have, you know, these tree trunk arms, but for some reason, and like you said, it's probably genetics, but I've got very defined arms, and I don't work them that much. I might work them once a week. But, I mean, for whatever reason, that just happens to be what my arms look like. So it is. It's a big factor as genetics. But the other thing, touching on, you know, trying to do more, like constantly doing more sets of arms and stuff like that, it's not going to work because you got to also understand, and you explain this in your book, that you're also using your arms for all these other assisting exercises, whenever you're doing any kind of, like, a pull-up or, you know, any kind of bent over row, even whenever you're doing bench press and stuff like that, you're using your arms. So you're taxing them in different exercises. It's not just whenever you work a specific arm exercise, that's the only time you're working it. It's in all these other exercises. So like Lee said, whenever you continually do more sets of arms, I mean, it's just not going to come out good. So one thing I wanted to know, Lee, if someone has, you know, some people say that their left arm is weaker than their right arm, or some people even have vice versa, you know, the right arm could be the stronger one. But typically in your experience, what would you recommend for that person to change in his program to kind of work on, like, the weaker point or bring that other weak arm up to par with the stronger arm?
Yeah, this is something that is common. I think virtually everybody has some imbalance between their left and right sides. And it's not just the arms. I mean, it could be your back, your chest, your legs, everything else. And typically, it's the dominant side is usually bigger and stronger. And what I mean by that is if you're right-handed, generally it's the right arm would be bigger and stronger than the left. But, you know, sometimes it's as crazy as it is, it could be the other way around. I've even heard of guys saying, hey, I'm right-handed, but my left arm is bigger than my right. Why that is, I have no idea. But, I mean, it's just, the hand of genetics that you were dealt, basically. But the big thing that I like to do when somebody has a big muscle imbalance is to focus primarily on exercises that work both sides independently. And a prime example of this is like dumbbell exercises where you have a weight in each hand and each side is forced to handle an equal workload. Because even if you're using barbell exercises, your stronger side can still overcompensate for that weaker side. You know, it's not necessarily a 50-50 split where, you know, you're handling 50% of the weight with each side. You know, it could be like a 60-40 split maybe where the dominant side is overcompensating and actually taking more of the workload. So dumbbell exercises are the prime ones that I like to use, and as well as cable exercises where you can work in single limbs. I personally love the Hammer Strength line of machines. I know a lot of gyms have them, and I'm fortunate enough to train at a gym which has a full line of Hammer Strength equipment which allow you to work each side of the body independently. So these type of things are great for building up the balance and proportion between the left and the right sides. Now, for most people, just including these exercises and pretty much basing your entire program around them, that will balance out, you know, the muscle development over time. But if the imbalance is really severe, I would even have people do an extra set or two at the end of their workouts for their weaker side. So in the case of arms, it might be, okay, at the end of your workout, we're going to do some extra, bicep curls and tricep extensions for your weaker side just to give it a little bit more muscle stimulation and try to help spur on some new growth that way.
Yeah, that makes
sense.
Yeah,
it's a common problem. I mean, I think the more experience you get with training, the less prominent it will be. But this is something that even guys at the highest level in bodybuilding have. For example, like Jay Cutler, if you look at his physique, one side of his body is more developed than the other side. And obviously someone like that, I mean, he's done everything there is possible to do to, you know, improve his physique. It's his entire livelihood. But it's still, it's just a genetic problem that some people do have.
Yeah, and I mean, I agree. Like, even myself, I know I have an imbalance on one side more than another. All you can do is just try to keep it minimal. But including some of those tips you just gave, I think they're excellent tips to maybe include an extra set on your weaker arm. And just by doing that, your body will have to adapt. And since you're exposing that weaker side to more stimulus, it'll have a greater chance of catching up to the stronger side, for sure. Another question that I wanted to ask you was, in your experience and just, you know, training clients and stuff like that, what has contributed to more growth for the arms? Like, would you recommend a person focus more on direct training or, like, indirect training? So would you recommend somebody – let me break it down better. Would you recommend someone doing pure bicep exercises and tricep exercises, or would you tell them that if you really want to pack on, you know, mass to your arms, you should do indirect training and get stronger in the compound lifts, like, you know, a bench press or a bent over row and stuff like that that also involves the biceps and triceps as a secondary muscle group?
Okay, the answer to that is kind of a unique one because both situations would apply. I actually would recommend the person start off doing more of a general type of training with less emphasis on just arm isolation and more emphasis on hitting the major muscle groups. And in fact, the Blast Your Biceps program is actually structured out this way. I mean, the first phase of the program doesn't have any direct arm isolation moves. It's all basically just big, basic compound exercises to increase your overall strength and power. And most people find that just by getting bigger and stronger all over, you'll also get bigger arms. Generally, the rule is for every 10 to 15 pounds of muscular body weight you put on, you'll gain approximately 1 inch on your upper arms. And this tends to work out even for guys who probably have naturally skinny arms. You will find that even though, you know, your other body parts may respond better, by getting bigger and stronger all over, your arms will still respond and get bigger. And one thing that I find is after you do this type of training, like let's say you did a 6-week training phase, where you're probably more of a power type of training, where you're not really focusing on isolation, you're focusing on mass building compound movements. After about 6 weeks of that, if you move into a more isolated training phase where you're doing some more direct isolation moves, that's totally new muscle stimulation, and your body will really respond well to it. So then you can get this another little growth spurt by including the arm isolation work at this time. And again, going back to the Blast Your Biceps program, that's exactly how I have the training phases laid out. You know, the first phase is a mass conditioning phase. Second phase is more of a direct isolation phase. And then the third phase, we move into another style of mass training as well. So again, it's breaking it down. So yeah, both styles of training work, but they need to be cycled in order to get the maximum benefit from them.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that's a good answer because, you know, if it was just a program that had you working arms 5 days a week, you know, it would kind of be a little sketchy. But I really like that idea of, you know, kind of indirect training. I mean, for example, when you use deadlifts and stuff like that, I mean, your whole, like every single muscle on your body is going to grow from that. It's not just, you know, for your legs or your lower back and stuff. So people have to realize that indirect training is just as important as direct, you know, isolation training for your arms. But, you know, I know there's no special number as far as sets and stuff like that go, but I know people are probably dying to know what you think is, you know, if there was a magic number, how many reps should people be focusing on when they're building, like trying to build mass in their arms? So in your program, what exactly do you include for repetitions when it comes to isolation exercises for biceps and triceps?
All right. Well, first of all, I just want to cover, there's the general rule when it comes to rep ranges is that lower reps tend to produce more strength and power and not quite as much size. I mean, you're not really in the hypertrophy phase with the lower reps because there's not enough time under tension, but they're great for building strength and power. Then when you get to the really high reps, that's more into the muscular endurance training phase. And again, a lot of time under tension, but it's not, again, the ideal scenario for stimulating muscle growth because generally if you're using really high reps, say like 25 or more, the resistance isn't high enough. Then when you get into the mid-range, I would just say the 10 to 15 rep range, that kind of be this, that's the sweet spot for the most part for muscle growth because you have kind of like the ideal time under tension and enough weight to stimulate muscle growth. So typically I like to work, you know, personally most of my workouts are in the 10 to 15 rep range when I'm gearing towards muscle growth. But again, that's going to vary depending on the exercise you do as well. You mentioned before there are deadlifts, for example. That's a big power exercise, and I usually train it as a power exercise with lower reps. You know, that just works well. But if we're getting into, say, like arm isolation stuff, I would say the heavy end of the scale would be down around 8 reps per set, and the lighter end of the scale would be up around 15 reps per set. And anywhere between those two ranges, between, say, 8 and 15, is where I would consider the sweet spot for maximum muscle growth. You know, you're in the hypertrophy training phase.
Awesome. That's I'm sure a lot of people are going to be happy to hear, you know, that exact number there. So
yeah,
it's always good to put something specific on it because a lot of people, like you said, for deadlifts, it is good to associate different rep ranges with different exercises.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, I'm sure a lot of people will benefit from that. But, okay, well, I mean, we talked about reps. What about, I mean, if there was one exercise you could do to build bigger biceps, which one would it be if you could only pick one out of them all?
Ooh, well, Sam, this would be a this is a tough one because, of course, we're not limited to just one exercise. But I'd say as a bicep mass building movement, I don't think there's anything that can really beat, say, like a standing barbell curl or probably a standing dumbbell curl, something along those lines for a direct bicep isolation exercise. But
and just quickly, I wanted to know, do you prefer using the preacher bar curl or a straight bar whenever you're doing or barbell bicep curls?
What have I found, okay, for years, I always used the easy curl bar, and I think that's what you meant when you said the preacher bar. Angle grip, yeah, easy curl bar.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people like that for curling, and it tends to be easier on the wrists, easier on the elbows and things like that. And if you are suffering from joint problems, it's a great alternative. But you're not really going to maximally stimulate your biceps with an easy curl bar because just the whole act of twisting your wrist all the way around, as it will be when you're grabbing a straight bar, I mean, just that motion there flexes your bicep. I mean, you can even do it now while you're sitting here listening. I mean, you twist your arm over, you can see your bicep starts to flex. And by having your arm twisted over all the way, supinated, that will maximally stimulate your biceps as you do your curl. So even though it's more uncomfortable, I would opt for the straight bar whenever possible. And the only time I would not use it for curls is if, you know, you're trying to work around an injury or it's just too painful. You know, like if somebody has joint problems and they physically can't do it, then obviously, okay, we'll go with an easy bar. But if you can use a straight bar, even if it's a little bit more uncomfortable, go for it. You know, I think you'll get better growth results in the end.
Yeah, for sure. I've noticed a big difference in tension on the bicep whenever I use a straight bar versus the easy bar there. So, yeah, and I mean,
yeah,
if
you'll
you
never
have injury,
get the full contraction. Like if you're using the easy bar, you'll never get that full contraction in the bicep like you will with a straight bar. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, and even I notice whenever I do, if I do like seated preacher curls with a dumbbell, I find, like you said, you know, whenever you twist your pinky inwards towards your arm, you get that contraction there. So whenever your arm's completely fixated in that position, you're always going to keep that tension on the bicep by using that straight bar. So, I mean, yeah, if you don't have an injury, go for it. But like if you're trying to work around something, like Lee said, you know, it's just a bit. A little less tension, I think, but you're still going to see some, you know, if you progress in the exercise, it's a progression nonetheless, so don't dismiss that just because of that. I wanted to clear up a myth here. I get a lot of people asking me, you know, what exercise is going to create a peak in their bicep, and in your opinion, have you ever been able to actually develop a peak, or do you think that that's just a genetic term? You know how you're talking about the arms can just be a genetic thing, and so have you found that there's some exercise to actually bring out a peak, or is that just a myth?
There is actually exercises to develop the peak of the bicep, but again, getting back to it, your genetic muscle shape, I mean, everybody has their baseline genetics, and that's going to determine your, you know, your muscle shape and everything else. And one thing, when it comes to the peak of the biceps, like some people have long biceps that like connect all the way down to the elbow, mm-hmm. and they tend to be longer, flatter-looking biceps. And then there's other people may have a shorter bicep, which almost looks like there's a gap between your bicep and your elbow. Now, when somebody is starting out, they may actually think that having that shorter bicep is a negative, but once you develop the arms, that shorter bicep will actually become a more peaked, you know, more separated and actually more impressive looking bicep when it's fully developed. You know, you think of the baseball biceps, you know, like, for example, the classic pictures of Arnold Schwarzenegger with the really high bicep peaks and things like that. Now, that's somebody who has a shorter bicep. So, again, your genetics do play a huge role. But one thing you need to look at, the bicep is two muscles. You know, you have the, hence the name, bicep. The outer head is a shorter head, and that gives your bicep more peak, and then the inner head tends to be the longer, fuller head to give your biceps more size and fullness. So doing exercises that target that outer bicep head will help to develop more bicep peak. And how you can easily do this is, for example, if you're doing like a straight bar curl, gripping the bar narrower tends to work the outer head. Gripping the bar wider tends to work more of the inner head. So it's kind of like the opposite. You know, if your hands are close, the outer head of the bicep tends to work more. If your hands are wide, the inner head tends to work more. So again, if bicep peak is something that you're trying to get, working with a closer grip can help stimulate it. And also doing exercises such as like hammer curls, which can focus on that the brachialis and that outer head of the bicep. Those are great exercises as well for building up more bicep peak. But again, it's still limited by your genetic shape. Another thing that I want to mention too when it comes to bicep peak is your level of body fat is going to have a huge impact. I find like for myself, when I'm in the off season and I'm carrying a bit of extra weight, I don't have as well peaked biceps. But when I diet down and my skin gets really thin, the muscle looks way more peaked and way more separated. So that has a huge impact as well. And it's something that you can control. I mean, you can focus on working the outer head of the biceps. You can control, you know, losing body fat. So those are things that you can actually do to improve your peak. But other than that, you know, like your genetic muscle shape, well, you're born with that. You're stuck with that one. But
yeah,
there are some things that you can actually do.
No, for sure. And I actually have a shorter bicep, so whenever I flex it, I kind of get that softball appearance. So
yeah,
I feel like I was gifted for that. I thank, you know, God for that. That's cool. Because, and like you said, whenever you diet down, it makes such a big difference because, like you said, in the off season, you got subcutaneous water under there. You've got, you know, a bit of fat storage going on. Mm-hmm. But when you diet down, man, your arms actually appear bigger. And they actually, they don't shrink, but they do become a bit smaller just because you're depleting your fat stores. And my arms went down by a little bit when I dieted for my show, but they looked like a lot bigger than what they were when I was at a higher body fat percentage. So for anybody that, you know, has failed to see any kind of definition in their biceps, and if you haven't been tracking your body fat, I'd definitely take that into account. If that's like your last resort, if nothing else is working for you, just really check your body fat, and the lower you go, the more, well, overall body definition you'll get. And just to touch on one more thing, for the competition, I mean, as I'm sure you know, Lee, you probably spent lots of time posing and practicing that in the mirror. And although it might be weird for some people, the more you practice, you know, contracting a muscle and just really focusing on that contraction, I find that it actually translates into the gym whenever you're training because there's that mind-muscle connection that you can make. And the stronger you can develop that bond, the better it is whenever you're working the muscle in the gym. And I've noticed a big change since when I was preparing for the competition and everything, and I started to do that. I started to really notice a jump in strength as well as definition and stuff. So it's also another way, you know, to bring out that really nice definition in your arm. So just for anybody, did you notice that whenever you're doing your competitions?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I do like to practice posing a lot when I'm getting ready for a show, and it's, you know, a serious part of my training because, after all, I mean, in a bodybuilding competition, I mean, that's what it is. I mean, you're displaying your hard work. So a lot of people, they put all this effort into getting in shape, you know, training and dieting and everything else, and then the posing is probably like secondary. I mean, I literally know guys who don't even practice their posing routine and kind of just pick a song and wing it. I mean, it shows when somebody gets on stage and they haven't practiced. And so that's something that I do put a lot of emphasis in. And even for folks who are not interested in getting on stage competing, which, I mean, I'm assuming that the vast majority of our listeners are in that category, they're not considering competing yet. Just flexing a stubborn body part, you know, on a regular basis will really help. Like, for example, let's just say your biceps are the stubborn muscle group. You know, flexing your arms and making a muscle and literally holding that for, say, 30 to 60 seconds and doing that a couple times a day, just really flexing and cramping the muscle and holding it as hard as you can for a minute. And doing that regularly will help, again, develop that mind-muscle connection so that when you're in the gym, you'll get a better pump in your arms. You know, you'll feel them working more. And typically, the muscles that you get the best pump in, that you really feel working, are the ones that respond the best. You know, if you're in the gym and you say, like, I'm training arms and I can't feel a pump in my arms, chances are your arms are probably not a very good muscle group. You know, and this can apply to any body part. You know, if you can't feel your back when you're doing your back workouts, then chances are your back is probably not very developed. So just focusing on flexing and squeezing those muscles, building that mind-muscle connection, I mean, that could be the little missing link that could help take your training to the next level. You know,
yeah, I agree completely with that. I mean, it wasn't until I started doing that that I started to really been able to control my muscles when I'm in the gym and get that contraction that I needed to spur new muscle growth. And another thing, too, is I find at least a lot of people that I train and a lot of people I see in the gym around me are always using way too heavy of a weight when it comes to any kind of arm training, but more specifically to biceps. I see people, you know, swinging the weight up. They're basically doing almost like a half squat and then, you know, just completely swinging the weight and trying to, you know, they're almost knocking themselves out by hitting themselves in the forehead. And it's okay to use a bit of momentum, you know, get in a rhythm, but I mean, just drop the weight and really focus on that contraction first. Make sure the form is there and then move up in weight. And as you progress in that manner, you're going to have a lot better chance of actually giving your muscles the reason to grow versus just using, you know, a weight that's way too heavy and you're not using proper form, so you're not putting proper contraction on the muscle. So I think that's another important note to touch on for anybody out there. And, you know, just always leave your ego at the door whenever you go into the gym. And you might have to drop your weight sometimes, like the amount of weight you're lifting. But in the end, I've found from experience that as long as you can feel the muscle working, it's a lot better than just going through the motion. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
With smaller body parts like, you know, biceps, triceps, and things like that, you're not going to make huge jumps in weight like you can with big compound movements. I mean, there's a big difference between curling, you know, a 30-pound dumbbell versus doing a 300-pound deadlift. You know, if you add 5 pounds to a 300-pound deadlift, that's not much at all. But if you add 5 pounds to a 30-pound dumbbell curl, I mean, percentage-wise, that's a huge jump. So you're not going to make massive strength gains in smaller muscle groups like that. But,
exactly.
You know,
no, that's a great point.
Yeah, you know, I mean, a lot of people, well, I want to go up 5 pounds each week. Well, you know, percentage-wise for small exercises, that's huge versus the big ones, again, squats, deadlifts, bench presses or whatever. You know, that adding 5 pounds a week to your lifts is actually a realistic goal for the short term. But, again, it's not going to carry over to all the small isolation exercises.
No, for sure. And I think that's a great point for everyone to note, you know, those different poundage increases are going to vary a lot. You know, there's going to be a big difference there between a deadlift and a bicep curl. But just you got to think of one's a total body movement and one is just an isolated movement for a smaller muscle group. So take it for what it's worth and just progress properly on each. But so we've covered reps, sets, exercises, and, you know, the common mistakes that some people are making out there. But the one thing that I think it comes down to, Lee, is just to have a plan to follow. I mean, we talked about, you know, like the reps today, but if someone just doesn't have any kind of plan to go against, then it's kind of hard for them to make real progress. It's one thing to learn all these, but it's another thing to actually implement them. Now, I read through your biceps program. It's a really thorough program. I mean, I looked at it, and it's about 150-some-odd pages, but it's just mm-hmm. packed with content, and I would have never thought that there could have been that much information for training your biceps. And I mean, it's incredible.
Yeah.
We can't get into it all on a 1 hour call, you know, in one night. So, I mean, for anybody who's interested in actually building up your biceps and building up the 2 inches, you know, in 8 weeks, I would definitely check it out. You have everything in the program that you need. You have exercise descriptions. You actually have a lot of photo demonstrations as well, which is really important for people to learn, you know, how to do the exercise properly. And the one thing I really liked about your program, Lee, was that you could tell that you've had such an enormous amount of experience in this field. You know, you really put a lot of your heart into this book, and you can tell. I mean, you can tell it's quality. It's not just a couple pages of theory and the workouts. I mean, you really give in-depth exercise prescriptions to build up some massive biceps and some big bulging triceps there. So,
mm-hmm.
I mean, could you just explain in a nutshell, just like I said, the book's, you know, fairly big and it does exactly what it's designed to do, but could you just maybe explain to people what they're going to get whenever they pick up the Blaster Biceps program?
Yeah, for sure. First off, I mean, the whole name, Blast Your Biceps, I kind of picked that because, I mean, I think it sounds cool, you know, Blast Your Biceps, but it's so much more than just a bicep workout, like you mentioned. It is a total body training system, and the whole idea here is that we're going to build up bigger arms, specialize on getting bigger arms, but we're going to do that through getting bigger and stronger all over. So, I mean, it's not just like you're going to do this program and get bigger arms. You're going to do this program and you're going to notice gains in your back, your chest, your shoulders, your legs, and everywhere else, as well as your arms. And, again, the target is the arms, but in order to get those big arms, you got to get bigger and stronger all over. So that's a big misconception. Like, a lot of people think, oh, is this just an arm workout? And no, it's a total body training system. But what they get with it, like I say, there's a complete training manual there, and it goes into so much more than just workouts. Everything from the mindset to even how to choose the proper gym to train in. I mean, goal setting, the mental aspect that goes behind it. I mean, there's a lot of inner game stuff that I cover here that I picked up through almost 20 years of weight training experience now. So it's not like, say, a Mickey Mouse slapped together workout program. This is something that I'm very passionate about because it's something that I struggled with personally, and I basically just spilled the beans on it through this program. And another cool thing that's totally unique here is it's not just a manual, but I include videos for every single workout. So I actually have every single training phase. Not only can you read about it in the manual, but you can actually watch the videos to go along. So, I mean, if you were a bit unsure of how to do an exercise, hey, I go through the entire video. I mean, I'm not sure exactly how much. I think there's over 3 or 4 hours of video footage that comes along with this program, so it's a huge package. Yeah.
No, I mean, that's awesome. And if I'm not mistaken, you also have the nutrition part covered too, right?
Yes, I threw in some extra bonuses. Like I say, the manual itself focuses mostly on training, but I do have like a supplement guide to go along with it, a nutritional guide as well. And again, the prime goal here when you're looking at getting maximum size, and so it's more of a mass-building nutrition program, and same with the supplement guide, and some tracking software that goes along with it as well. So, I mean, I did cover all bases as far as training, nutrition, supplementation.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that's the biggest benefit to getting an online fitness program like the one you have right here, is just that you take all the guesswork out for the end user. And I was, you know, on the other side of the fence for a long time when I first started, and the biggest thing I noticed was whenever I got a program, the reason why I was successful in doing it was because, first of all, I was held accountable because I bought it, you know, I wanted to use it. It was something I really wanted to accomplish. But I didn't have to ask a bunch of other questions because everything's answered within the program. And that's the kind of advantage you get whenever you get a program specifically designed to achieve something. And, of course, I mean, like Lee said, it's going to be building your arms, but it's also going to be building mass in your entire body. And I'm sure that's not that's not something anyone wants to really turn down. I know for myself that that's always an added benefit. So on top of getting bigger arms, you're also going to get an entirely, you know, more muscular body. So, like I said, if anyone is interested on this call to dramatically increase your arm size more than probably you've ever done, you know, in the past training years you've been doing it, or if you're new to it and you kind of want to see a bigger jump in your arm size versus anything else, definitely check out blastyourbiceps.com. Lee's put together a heck of a program. And I was actually looking at it. I'm on a growth cycle right now using my own programs, but after that, I'm definitely going to take it up and give it a shot and try to add an extra inch or two to my arms. I mean,
yeah.
I'm an author and stuff like that, but it's always nice to see other programs. You know, it's something interesting like this. So, of course, I'll be checking it out and letting you know how it goes. But I checked out the science and the theories and the workouts, and you'll definitely get your money's worth in this. So, I don't know, Lee, did you want to open it up for some Q&A now? Or?
Yeah, sure. We got some callers here tuning in live, listening. So, yeah, I'm actually going to open this up. And basically what we want to keep the theme on is, I guess, arm training in general. It could even be mass building, but we're going to stick to those kind of questions, mass training, arm training, any specialization, stuff like that. So again, I'm going to, there we go, conference is unmuted. So we'll take them one at a time. Hopefully this goes in an orderly fashion. But if you have any questions, feel free to chime in. Just introduce yourself and ask away.
Well, not everybody at once. Hey, Lee, it's Steve Moret again. Hey, a question for you. As we had mentioned earlier, I'm recuperating now from the rotator cuff surgery. And, you know, I'm trying to keep working the left side, and I understand that within a certain extent, even though I can't do anything active just yet with the right until that the tendon heals up a bit, that the body will actually try to balance itself out naturally. What are your thoughts on that?
You know, it will. Your body is actually going to try and balance things out, just like you said. I haven't had direct experience with a shoulder injury, like you say, you got a rotator tendon tear. But a prime example of this, and I'll give you now, is my girlfriend Patricia. She broke her wrist a couple years ago in a jiu-jitsu training. And while her wrist was broken, I mean, obviously she's very limited in what she could do for her whole, I believe it was her left wrist and her whole left side of the body. But now that it's healed up, her left side is actually more developed than her right side. So the side that was actually injured is actually bigger. I mean, you can even see it throughout the arms and her traps and everything else. So, I mean, a couple of years after the injury, it's like the body overcompensates to send, I guess, more nutrients and recovery and everything else towards that damaged area. So I'm assuming that in your case, I mean, you have your rotator cuff, which is injured, and obviously you're resting it up. But give that some time. I mean, your body will actually send, you know, its recuperative abilities to that damaged area. Another example that I have as well, I know a friend of mine was in a car accident and hurt one side of his body, and he had to get some skin grafts and things like that done. And on that side where he had to get some skin grafts done and things like that, he noticed, like, his arm here would grow, like, more than twice as fast on his injured side than it was growing on the other side. So, I mean, it's just a sign that your body is sending, you know, its energies to help speed up the recovery in that damaged area. So that kind of, is that kind of what you're getting at?
Yeah, no, it's, like I said, I was just kind of curious if you'd had any, you know, experience or knew anybody that had been through that. It sounds kind of like you did then, so.
Mm-hmm. Like I say, not directly with the shoulders, but I've experienced with friends and family, like I say, with other injuries. And it is. It's just strange how the body works, but it will send, you know, it's direct its energy, I suppose, to help them recover that area.
Well, for what it's worth, if you want, I'll keep you posted via email on what I find with this.
Yeah, for sure. I'd love to hear your story and stuff about that. And like I say, that even though this is a shoulder-related injury, I mean, this can kind of apply to any type of injury, like I mentioned. So it's certainly valuable, a valid question to have. All right, I know we've got you know, a couple dozen people here tuned into the call. Feel free if you have any questions that you'd like to ask with regards to you know, training, nutrition, supplementation, whatever. We've got another 10 minutes to go. So
I'm sorry, Lee. Who's your guest? What's his name again?
Joey. Let's call him Joey V.
Joey
E, we'll call him.
That'll make it simple.
Yeah.
Joey, at first I wanted to congratulate you on your success in your show. That's very impressive.
Oh, thank you very much.
You're welcome. I did want to ask both of you. You were talking earlier about percentage-wise gains you can expect with compound exercises in large body parts as compared to expectations for your arms. Well, what kind of expectations, if everything's working efficiently, your nutrition is correct, what would you expect to see as far as a like a curl maximum from week to week change?
Do you want to shoot this, Joey, or do you want me to take it? It's up to you.
Well, I can give my input, and then you can give some input too. How about that?
Sounds good. Yep. We'll both do it.
Well, I mean, in my experience, as far as any kind of big compound lift, like a deadlift, depending on how long you've been training, too, because you reach a point in your training where you're not necessarily going to stop growing or stop getting stronger, but your gains aren't going to be as big anymore. So when you're starting off, I would say, you know, 5% increases on big compound exercises like deadlifts and stuff, granted that you are taking in a good nutrition plan and you're following a solid training program. As far as, you know, a bicep curl and stuff like that, it's really dependent on the person. Lee, do you want to chime in for the isolation increases?
Yep, sure. I'll kind of go with what I recommend and what I shoot for myself. When it comes, again, like Joey was mentioning, for the big exercises, and what I mean by big exercises are, you know, your rows, your presses, squats, deadlifts, things like that, you can typically gain, you know, 5 pounds per week on those major lifts, and a lot of people can keep that up for a long time. I mean, you know, it could be several weeks or probably even several months keeping those little 5 pound jumps going if you're consistent and, I mean, everything's spot on with your training and nutrition. I actually like to pace myself with these big exercises and limit myself to 5 pound jumps, because I find that if you feel, you know, your body is, you're hungry for increasing the weight and you feel like you can actually do more, then that just adds to the motivation for next time when you want to go. So again, pace yourself. Like, let's say you're on a bench press program and you want to go 5 pounds per week. Pace that out. You can stack those 5 pound jumps week after week for several weeks in a row before you hit a plateau. Now, when it comes to biceps, obviously you're handling much lower weight, and the same with triceps. So like I said, adding 5 pounds to a 200 pound bench press versus 5 pounds to, say, a 20-pound dumbbell curl is a huge difference. So what I typically do when it comes to arm training and things like that, I like to focus on increasing the reps. So, like, let's say I'm doing sets of 8 reps this week. Maybe next week I'll try to do sets of 9 reps. And then week after, sets of 10 reps. And if I can get it up to, say, like 12 or more reps, then I'll make that 5 pound jump and then drop my reps back down and start the whole process again. So keep within, say, the 8 to 12 rep range, and then once you're doing all your sets with 12 reps good form, up the weight 5 pounds for your next workout, and then start that little rep climb again. That's a way that I like to progress for the smaller isolation exercises.
Yeah,
it's
yeah,
too bad, Jim. Okay, go ahead. Yeah.
No, I'm the same way, actually. You just kind of reminded me when you were talking about it, but even whenever I feel like I could maybe increase, I don't know, 10 pounds or something like that on the bench press, I purposefully don't do it, because if ever I do that, sometimes I find the next week I'll come back a little bit weaker because I expose my body to too much of a stimulus. And by progressing in smaller increments, you're actually going to leave your body enough time to recover properly instead of trying to overload your body too quick. And the other thing I completely agree with is reaching a cutoff point for isolation exercises. So instead of always trying to add poundage, you would essentially reach a cutoff point, like, say, 12 reps, and then you drop the weight back down, or, you know, increase the weight and drop the reps there. So, yeah, I mean, I completely agree with that. That's what I do. It's because it becomes too hard to actually add a bunch of weight to a bicep curl. I mean, you're better off just keeping good form and going for a higher rep, and then once you reach that cutoff, you know, adjust at that point.
Excellent answers, gentlemen.
Thanks.
Do you mind if I ask something else real quick?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. I just recently bought the Critical Bench and the Blaster Bench package. I must admit, I haven't been in the gym to bench press probably for the last 20 years.
Okay.
And what I'm wondering about, and this is on all exercises, because it also came with the blaster squat, and I'm really looking forward to getting into that, is how do you figure, how do you find your initial starting max on most exercises without wearing yourself out or hurting yourself?
Right. Okay. First of all, I mean, if you haven't, like, done any heavy lifting for a long time and just getting back into the gym, I would just kind of go through a general training phase you know, maybe like a total body workout. It could be based around, say, like, you know, a few sets of bench presses, a few sets of squats, a few sets of rows or something like that, and probably
work
do that every
second
day.
Work on form more than
anything
else? Work on form more than anything else to start with?
Yeah, get your form down pat, and for the first, like, I'm assuming, like, if you haven't worked out in at all for a long time, you're totally coming back and look just like a beginner again. Okay, for the first
just starting,
time, literally go through the motions with your workouts. Get into the habit of just going to the gym on a regular basis. Get used to going through the exercises and learning the form and just feeling how your muscles work. Just get back to the whole swing of things. And, you know, if you feel like, okay, I did a set and this was obviously way too light, then, you know, increase the weight, say like 10 pounds or something. But after a month of going through the motions with your workout, you'll kind of have a ballpark figure of what you can lift for a lot of those major exercises. And then you can take it from there. But I would always, like, if you're doing a program, say, like the critical bench or the blaster bench, where it actually is a base on a 1 rep max bench, I would do a conservative estimate. You know, I would take the base of 1 rep max off the base and tell you any day of the week, rather than the perfect all-time bet. That tends to be a better way to go about it. And again, like Bill was mentioning earlier, take those strength gains in the aggressive, conserved fashion, and you tend to go on the whole growth phase rather than trying to gain too much too soon and end up burning yourself out or getting into the process. Just come back, I would just basic beginner's workout and literally fix the motion. Don't have exercise. I just want to mention there's a lot of static on the line here, folks.
Yeah.
Okay, so you are hearing that too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hopefully my answer came through.
I did miss a whole lot of that, and I'm hoping it makes it to the recording.
Yeah, shoot. Maybe it seems to be cleared up now. Maybe I'll just quickly recap what I was saying. For the first month back, I was mentioning just go through the motions with your workouts. Don't really be too particular on, you know, how much am I lifting or whatever. Just literally get into the habit of going to the gym on a regular basis and get your form down for your exercises and things like that. And just by doing that, you're going to get a, you know, ballpark figure of what you can handle for the major lifts. And then when it comes time to actually, you know, if you have to base your strength off of 1 rep max, do it conservatively. I mean, if you want to, you know, work your way up and kind of test it, you can. But be conservative with those lifts. Like, I wouldn't recommend somebody going in and pushing themselves to the point, you know, where they're going to strain or pop or pull something in order to, you know, figure out their true 1 rep max. Take a conservative estimate and base training weights off that. Find that being more conservative and having a long growth phase works out better in the long term than trying to do too much too soon and end up with injury and overtraining and burning yourself out.
Good. That's what I wanted to hear.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Think of the long term when it comes to, you know, this isn't a sprint to the finish. This is more like a marathon. We're in this. We want to make gains, you know, not just this week, this month, but, you know, I want to be healthy, you know, 10, 20, 30, 50 years from now. I'd like to be doing this. You know, think of it as the long-term gain.
I'd like to be alive 50 years from now.
Exactly, yeah, and still working out.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Still a little bit of static on the line, but it's not quite as bad. So, like I say, if anybody else is here, we'll take one more question before we clue it up for the night.
So, guys, okay. I just had one quick question for you. Number one mass building triceps exercise.
Okay. Tricep exercise. You wanna? What's your number one tricep exercise, Joey?
It would definitely have to be a tie between. Kind of like a decline close grip barbell bench press, but my other favorite one that I've kind of been favoring right now is weighted dips, you know, not flaring the elbows out, but just really focusing on the triceps And, of course, you can't use such a low rep range with an exercise like that in particular, because with triceps, I find if you just train a little bit more repetitions, it's better, it'll keep that contraction on the muscle better. But, yeah, I would say I would say weighted dips for me. That's just personal to me. I mean, everyone's different. Like, Lee, what's your number one?
I'm going to go with power rack bench press lockouts. And this was actually covered in the third phase of the Blast Your Biceps program. But this is an exercise I got from power lifters where they literally do bench presses in the top range in the power rack, just focusing on locking the weight out. So the top range of a bench press, like those last few inches, all it is straightening your arms out under the bar, and it's pure triceps, so you can handle a huge amount of weight. And like even way more than you can bench press in a full range of motion. And all that weight, all that stress on the muscle, it will really overload it. So I would say that's probably my number one mass builder right there.
In those lockouts, about how far are you moving, like 2 inches?
It kind of depends. You have to like play around with it, set it up in the power rack and the bench, because obviously different power racks are, you know, different heights and stuff.
Sure.
But I would like to be able to lock it out and hold the bar, I'd say 4 to 5 inches above the pins when it's fully locked out.
Okay, okay.
And another thing, keep your grip fairly close on this. And well, I should rephrase that. Keep a medium grip. Don't go excessively wide. Like for me, I like to use either my pinky finger on the rings of the Olympic bar or even a little bit narrower. But I don't go like crazy close, like with your hands just a couple inches apart. And I wouldn't go too wide either. Keep it, you know, just a bit wider than shoulder width. And that'll have the maximum weight, and it'll also place maximum stress into the triceps.
Very good. Thanks,
now,
guys.
I'd say that. Like Joey said, I'm kind of tied between that. That would be my number one compound mass builder. And if I had to say another one for triceps, you kind of inspired me here, it would be the decline bench skull crusher. During my training, you know, I always hated the regular skull crushers, you know, the lying tricep extensions. Most people use the easy bar, lie on a flat bench, and do these tricep extensions. And I knew it was a good exercise, but it just killed my elbows for years, and I kind of avoided it and everything else. But I finally found a variation where if you do it on a decline bench, so you're actually facing down, you know, just the same as if you're doing like a decline bench press or whatever, that angle places less stress on your elbows, actually gives you a better range of motion in the triceps, and I find that I get a killer pump from that exercise. So very often I'll do like a mass builder, say like the close grip bench, the power rack lockout bench that I mentioned, and then those as stretch exercise afterwards, and I just get crazy pump in the triceps when I do the decline bench tricep extension with an easy bar.
Could you take that exercise and compound it into a lat workout also at the same time?
Like a pullover type exercise, you mean?
Yeah, let the weights go all the way to the floor, pull it up with your lats, and then extend.
Yeah. I do include pullovers, but no, I wouldn't do them this tricep extension. I would just focus purely on doing it as a tricep exercise. For like my back or chest workout, I sometimes do pullovers, but I keep that separate.
Okay.
But that's
okay.
A good point. The pullovers are a great exercise for the back and the chest, but that's you know, different ball game here.
Okay.
I'm just talking about tricep exercise, yeah.
But just, actually, I want to change my answer there. The only reason I picked a close grip bench press is just because we don't have a power rack at the gym in my hometown here. But whenever I have the chance and I have the power rack there, I definitely, it hasn't been a while that I've been using it. But, yeah, for sure, that one would be the number one, just because you have that limited range of motion and you can really work with it. Versus if you don't have the power rack, you kind of have to force yourself to stop, and you're not sure if you're stopping in the right spot every time on a regular bench, you know. But, yeah, the power racks would definitely triumph over the regular bench, close grip bench.
Another little thing, when I'm doing those exercises in the power rack, I'll literally let the bar, you know, smack down and hit the pins in between each rep. So, like, it's not like I'm trying to control it or pause it at the top. I just lock it out, hold it for, you know, a second, and then let it come down, hit the pins, and it reset, and then press again. So each rep, I'm literally doing it from a dead stop off the pins, and I find that that really works a lot harder. Because it's harder to start a weight from a dead stop than it is just keep the momentum going and pump out, you know, reps. Like, for example, if you did deadlifts and stop the weight on the floor in between each rep, that's a lot harder than just pumping out rep after rep and keeping the weight going. All right, folks, that's a little over an hour now we've been doing the call. So like I say, I think we're going to clue it up here tonight. Great stuff. I thank Joey for taking the time to interview me. I really enjoyed it. And it's cool when somebody else asks some questions because it gets me thinking in ways that I normally don't think.
Yeah.
So again, I think we covered some cool stuff here tonight.
Oh, I think that there's a lot of information there, you know. And, I mean, I learned a lot, too, from you whenever I was...
muted.
Oops. All right, go ahead.
I was just saying, I learned a lot from you when I was first starting out. So, I mean, and you stood the test of time. So, I mean, congratulations on that. And thanks for all the information. You know, I'm going to share this with my members as well. My muscle building program is really kind of a proportional gaining system, but it's nice to, you know, add in a little spice and a little bit of variation with your Blaster Biceps program as well. So anybody want to check that out, like I said, blasterbiceps.com. Lee's got some killer information, as you can probably tell already just by being on this call. And, of course, if you have any questions for me or Lee, you know, just get to our contact pages and feel free to shoot us an email on anything related to biceps or muscle building or any kind of fitness-related questions. And, Lee, it's been a pleasure to have you on the call tonight. I really appreciate you taking the time for me as well as my members, and I'm sure your clients appreciate it too.
All right, Joey, thanks a lot. I really appreciate it. And, again, if anybody wants to get some more information about you, it's bonestobuff.com. Is that correct? I believe it is.
Yeah, and that's it.
Yep, bonestobuff.com. And like I said, I've been following along with some of your stuff. I mean, you do have a cool program there. And, again, geared towards, you know, the skinny guy who wants to put on, you know, what is it, go from skin and bones to strong and buff. And
that's
something
yeah.
that I think it's very important because most of the fitness media out there, you know, is geared towards fat loss and it's geared towards that overweight person who wants to trim down. And they kind of ignore that skinny person who wants to build up. And I think from an emotional standpoint, it's just as painful to be that skinny person trying to build up as it is to be that overweight person trying to trim down. So it's kind of an area that a lot of people don't touch on, but, you know, you're living proof that it can be done.
Yeah, completely. You know, but just before we leave, I want to say that that really touched something with me there. You know, I was telling some of the people that they hang around with, you know, when someone calls someone overweight or something like that, it's a big insult. But if you're called skinny, nobody really considers it an insult. But to me, it
some
is.
People even,
like,
some people even consider it a compliment, especially from a female perspective.
Exactly.
You know,
but as a guy, man, you don't want to hear that. Like,
no,
hearing skinny
no,
is just as bad as about hearing you're overweight or something. So,
yeah.
I mean, I'm really passionate about helping people reach the success, you know, that I feel that I've reached in my own life just by an online fitness program. That's where I started, and it's made such a big difference in my life because it's opened the doors to many different opportunities outside of fitness as well. So, yeah, I mean, I cover a lot in that program just because I started off on that other side of the fence. I include a lot of things that help people kind of beat the learning curve that took me so long to beat. And, yeah, so if anyone wants to check that out, for sure. And if you have any questions, just feel free to email me. And I'd love to do another call with you sometime, Lee. We'll maybe dive into some more material, maybe some other muscle groups. Sound good to you?
Sounds good, man. Like I say, there's so much stuff to cover, but so little time. But, again, I really enjoyed this tonight, and I think, you know, we had some good questions afterwards. So good stuff, man. I think tonight was a success.
Awesome. Well, we'll definitely do it again.
All right.
And thanks for everyone for being on the call, too.
Mm-hmm. All right, Joey. Take care, man.
All right, Lee. Take care.
All right. Over and out. Okay, this recording, just want to let everyone know, will be posted up on our website within the next 24 hours. All right. Take care. Good night.